Their time with Jesus was neither ordinary nor predictable. So being one of Jesus' disciples could not have been easy. How many times do you think they went to sleep at night thinking, "Who is this man? How does he do the things he does? Why did he call me? And why am I following him?" They were on an emotional roller coaster ride with him, with more peaks and valleys than they could ever have imagined. Peter is probably the best disciple to get a sense of what that ride was like, because when it came to emotions, or just about anything for that matter, he didn't hold back. And he didn't think about what he said before he said it. Kind of reminds me of some extroverted friends of mine. The gospel reading a couple weeks ago was about Peter, who was first known as Simon. And he was dragging empty nets behind him to the shore. He'd been fishing all night and he'd caught nothing. There was a man standing on the shore, and it was Jesus, but Simon didn't know that. The man told him to put his nets back in the water, and as tired as Simon must have been, he didn't argue with him, he did it anyway. And when he did, he pulled in so many fish that he had to get help to drag them into his boat. Simon could not have been more excited when he approached Jesus. But then he was filled with despair, with remorse, as if Jesus had exposed some dark place in his soul. He immediately fell to his knees, and when he did, he heard Jesus tell him that he would become a fisher of men. Something about that caused Simon to get up, leave his nets and family behind, and follow Jesus. Not long after that, Simon and some of the other disciples followed Jesus to the top of the mountain to pray. When he had finished praying, Jesus asked them who people thought he was. They answered that people thought he was probably a prophet. But then Jesus asked them, "Who do you think that I am?" And of course, without thinking first, Simon blurted out a flash of insight, "You are the Messiah of God." And that's when Simon became Peter, from the Greek word Petros, meaning rock, the rock on which Christ's church would be built. I doubt if Peter probably knew what that meant, but he was excited to be in Jesus' company at that moment. Then Jesus told his disciples that he would soon have to suffer and die. "Say it's not so," said Peter. His excitement quickly turned back into despair as he wondered, what kind of Messiah is Jesus? In today's gospel, we're back on top of the mountain again, with Jesus and Peter and two other disciples. They're exhausted from having been traveling, and they had a hard time keeping awake. But then they saw a bright light, and they heard a conversation that Jesus was apparently having with two other people, whom they somehow identified as Moses and Elijah. Maybe they were just dreaming. But Peter felt called to do something and decided it would be a great idea to build dwelling places for Jesus and his two guests. I'm not sure how he thought he was going to do that, but I think he just wanted to preserve the excitement of that moment. Then God overwhelmed them all with a dark cloud and spoke to them like he did to Moses, as we just heard in Exodus so long ago, when he gave Moses the commandments to give to the Israelites. This time, God's words were, "This is my son, my chosen one." And his commandment to them was simply, "Listen to him." It must have been quite a thrilling moment for the disciples. But that excitement turned into despair as they all climbed back down the mountain, back to the real world of suffering, when they were confronted by a boy convulsing with the demons who needed Jesus' healing. These extremes in emotions must have taken their toll on Peter and the other disciples. Yet they continued to follow Jesus, despite what Jesus said lay ahead for him and for them. What kept them going? Despite the fact that Jesus called them faithless, it had to have been faith. What else could it have been? It feels like we're right on top of the mountain with Jesus and Peter, James, and John. That moment of exhilaration when the light of Jesus during the season of Epiphany has been shining on us all and revealing to us who Jesus is and what it means to have faith in him. And for a few days more, we can affirm what we've learned by saying and singing as many alleluias as we want to, before being dropped down in the valley of the season we call Lent. Today, Transfiguration Sunday, is the bridge between those two seasons. And we're on that bridge right now, trying to grab hold of whatever faith we have to ground us, to stabilize us, and to maybe just help us put one foot in front of the other. I remember the very first time I preached at Emmanuel Brook Hill when I was a summer intern there in 2003. The gospel reading was about the disciples being in a boat in the middle of a terrible storm with something that looked like a ghost approaching them on top of the water. Once Jesus identified himself, then of course Peter wanted to jump right out in the water and do something. He wanted to go meet him. His faith was what got him out of that boat, but it was the fear of the unreality of what was happening that caused him to sink. So, I boldly concluded that the opposite of faith must be fear. And I felt pretty good about that until after the service, when someone there came up to me and said she disagreed with my conclusion. She didn't say why, but it was enough to send me back into the valley of despair. But she was right to question it. Maybe doubt is the opposite of faith. Or maybe it's certainty. And maybe some fear. But they all eat away at the fabric of faith. They're not really faith's opposites. Maybe faith has no opposite other than no faith. I believe that we all have faith, but life itself can make us feel more or less connected to that faith. But faith in what? I think the disciples had faith in the goodness of Jesus, because they kept seeing evidence of it everywhere they went. His healings, his teachings. He's loving the unlovable. He was God's son and lived out of the goodness of God's own heart. Yet God allowed his only son to suffer and die. Where was the goodness in that? The goodness is what came afterwards in the resurrection. It's not ours to know how or why, but rather to have faith in God's goodness in redeeming and reconciling everything that happens to us and around us. It's stronger than our worst fears and our greatest doubts. It's what keeps us along for the ride, no matter how many peaks and valleys there are, and makes every minute of this gift we call life worth living. Amen.